Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, folks, this is Julie. I apologize. I had to step away from the presentation earlier today. So how helpful I will be, because I missed the entire last part of the presentation. So I apologize. I don't know how helpful I'll be in this session. But, you know, I'm glad to be back on.
Yeah, and I also apologize. I'm in a house with a dog, a cat, and my family. So they're all trying to be quiet. So if the dog barks, and because I have the microphone off, hopefully, but during this time, I will not. So
he just wants to join the meeting still.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, Denise, it's only the three of us, Ryan, with you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a, and it's not really with a strategic decision. It's with a word that was included in the, my God, I can't see it now, but it's the word equity. And the reason why I want to raise the issue of equity is not because I don't approve of using equity. What I want is to make sure that equity is not seen as access and only in the beginning, that when we use equity, we use it to evaluate and measure results. So in the one of the pillars is the really the evaluation of what CHIFA does. So I want to see equity used for outcomes or for results, not for inclusion, not for the beginning, not so we put everybody and support everybody, but that the results that equal that CHIFA gets represent and reflect that equity that we are advocating for. Denise, do you remember where equity was? Again, she said not to ask you questions, but you know, we can ask you questions.
equity.
I think it was in one of the strategic I know it was with inclusion, equity.
I think it was in the value.
It was not in the, yes, it was in the values. It was not in the vision because we got right. That in a handout, but I don't see that I have the values. So I think it's part of the values.
Yeah,
I would agree. So I you know, what I want is that equity value to be a continue into outcomes. Does that make sense? Not to leave it in just as in an access issue or you know, whatever, but in the results.
So be equity value be considered in outcomes? Is that how you want
to? Not be considered, no. Be part of the outcomes.
Okay. Okay.
Outcomes of the expected outcomes, if you want to say something like that.
Okay.
You know, I don't even like inclusion. It's not including, it's making sure that whoever you invite, you know, it's has the outcomes or the results that you are offering. Mm-hmm. So. I think also I mentioned the agility. I thought that, you know, in terms of value, to me, that was very a critical component of CHIFA being able to do the work in during this very difficult year and being able to meet the needs of Connecticut, again, by pivoting the grant program into supporting the immediate needs created by COVID. So how do we maintain that agility? How does CHIFA continue to have that agility while doing you know, the work it needs to do? And I think it's the agility is also connected to the changing economic environment that we're going to be, that we're in the middle of. So to me, agility is agility, nimbleness, whatever word you want to use, is a critical component. Government tends to be, you know, we're quasi-public, but agencies that are public tend to be a sort of seen as bureaucratic. So to be agile in this environment is, to me, is a critical value. I'm talking more about values in terms of
Estelle, I think that that also could probably piggyback off of part number four for innovation, right? I don't know. I'm thinking that within that, when you're talking about the vision, maybe it's not just the vision, but it's also the vision and the values together, because you all, innovation can also be new ideas. But to be, as you said, agile to adjust, that's innovative in itself.
Absolutely. You're right. You made that connection in a very, in a powerful way. I agree. I totally agree, Kimberly. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd add Chosla to that too, because I think we need to be responsive to our environment. So it's not just the one, but it's both areas need to be creative in how they're able to respond.
So when we, one other one, Denise, that I think about as my background in higher education, is everybody from higher education here or no?
I am.
Yeah, me too. I think Julia's too.
Yeah.
Okay. When you look at the pillar number five, and it's public engagement and accountability, and I heard Josser's presentation, I didn't comment on his presentation, but I did listen into it, and I was glad to hear about the outreach. And so that, I think, piggybacks off of pillar number five. Sorry not to jump around. These are the ones of interest to me. And so I may as well put my energy on the ones that I know I can add value to. And if you're there to reach out from a Chifa and a Chesla, and to build awareness and understanding, confidence, that I like the I like this strategic initiative. But something that really, really hit home with me, and I just want to—it's a story, a little, and I'm going to keep it brief. But it's also my own experience. And as I know about the demographics, so you're coming out of a baby boomer of demographics, and we've heard this in higher education for many years, okay? And so now you have less students, where there are more higher educational institutions trying to get these students. But in addition to that, what they do in higher ed, I've been in the private sector as well as the public sector, is, you know, they recruit. They're looking for the number. And as a finance person who was the one that if the student couldn't make the payments, that I'm the one who would have to say goodbye, okay? Because they couldn't pay the bill. Because they're, I spent some time at University of Hartford with Peter Lacey. And so there was a gap, because in that gap, the gap was $10,000, okay? Nobody is teaching these students that if they decide to go to a public education versus a private education, okay, that how are they going to come up with the gap? Like he was trying to talk to them about the loans and talk about their debt. But before they sign on, I was one of those people that the family income was probably a household of five, and you're talking the family income was somewhere in the vicinity of $50,000 to $75,000, and the gap could not be filled because we did not have endowments that could fill that gap. Now, these students, and I'm going to focus on minority because right now in the demographics, it was noted that Latino, Estelle, I hope that you can help me in that category, is that was increasing, okay? And as that demographic is increasing, but yet the household income is lower, okay? Then somebody, and these are the kids that are the first time being educated. I was one of those kids, okay? But I'm, of course, not of the same, I don't know how to say the word, ethnicity. That the background of educating them is far more important. And I'm talking about the counseling. It's not, you're not going to get this from enrollment. You're not going to get this out of the people that are trying to get the kids. It's those that are involved with the borrowing. And you think that the financial aid office is going to do that? They're not going to do that. They give it to you and it's very light. It's very, they don't understand. So what happens is this, and it's a very bad spiral effect. You can't fill the gap. They can't make the payment. They force the family to sign off on payment plans. They can't make the payment plans. Okay. So then afterwards, when you're done and you can't make that payment plan, usually you can stay from the fall into the spring because you're not going to make somebody move out. But then when the next semester comes and the fall is here again, we're not going to let you return because usually you're going to owe $10,000. Okay. And they can't fill that gap. However, that's a private. If they went to public, there's a good possibility that the whole thing would have been covered under their Pell Grant. Okay. Nobody's telling them that. There's nothing wrong with starting out if you can't afford it with a public to then, if you want, and if you aspire to go to a private and transfer. And I'm not saying that's the model we should encourage, but I think that people don't understand when they get that big vision of grand, you know, you want to get out of the house, you're going to be on your own. What can you afford? What's the price tag that you can afford? Yeah. When you look at driving a car, it's like your education. What can you afford?
Yeah, Kimberly, there's a couple of things going on, and Chancellor is part of them. One of them is really an initiative that the governor is supporting and the Department of Education is really supporting, which is ensuring that every high school student fills out FAFSA, because FAFSA is the key to really allowing low-income students to afford higher education. The other thing is free community colleges, and I think
Biden
administration would really continue to support that. In Connecticut has begun it, but it hasn't been the enrollment hasn't been there. So I think those two are initiatives. I think part of what we need to say is continue for CHESLA to ensure that they participate or they're engaged in initiatives that support low-income students attending higher education.
Education,
because you're right, better. You're right about those stories. Loan forgiveness, what the Department of Education just did is really forgave loans students that had gone to predatory for-profit institutions of higher education, which were taking advantage, especially of veteran students. They just forgave, millions of dollars in loans from those students. So I think it's really, there's more intentionality in the way things are, the policies being promoted. I'm very enthusiastic about FAFSA. There are states that require FAFSA as a high school graduation requirement. Connecticut is not there, but they're going to be recognizing the high schools that have increased their FAFSA completion significantly this year and made that really very visible and very important. Yeah. I think that's a critical area for students to be able to go into college.
Yeah. Estelle and Kimberly, I have to say, this year has been unique. We have been very disappointed, I think, on the higher education side, that many of the high schools, of course, it was unforeseen, but the high school completion rate of FAFSA is way down in the state of Connecticut, lower than almost most other states. And of course, because of our issues with COVID, we certainly can understand it. I think the problem that I think we see in higher education is that the education of students really needs to take place in a greater level at the high school level. So I think the governor's initiative to try to move things into the high school, get colleges and organizations like CHESLA and our Connecticut Higher Education Authority to be more involved on those levels is very helpful, because the education needs to go there. Students come with total, you know, no matter what you tell them, they have an idea in their head of where they want to be or what they want to do.
And you're right.
You can't support them. I can't tell you how many students we would encourage to say, you know, maybe you go part-time. Maybe you go the community college route. We can't fill that gap for you. They just don't want to hear it.
And then
then you have some institutions that will actually buy these students away from us. You know, they've got the best and the brightest, and they'll give, and that may not be the best fit academically for the students.
That's really important.
There's lots of things going on with students trying to make good decisions. I think the important thing for CHESLA is that they have an initiative and they have the loan program that are really second to none. I mean, we need to be able to maintain those type of programs and be open to any other opportunities for financing education, whether they be, and I don't know, and I'm sorry again that I missed education because I've been so interested in what's been going on, the income contingent loan programs, any of those other income shares, all of those other new initiatives may come forward. Again, the agility, the nimbleness, the creativity to offer programs that can be responsive to the financial needs of all students at all income levels. As you'll see, a lot of our CHESLA, you know, kind of sits around the $100,000 mark. How can we reach some people that really need a little bit more help? Okay. And those are some of the things that we need to consider in the place. And CHESLA's done a great job of public engagement and outreach. They have actually reached into the state school systems where they are taking advantage now. Them working more with the financial aid offices has made a big difference. We have a lot more of our financial aid advisors that take CHESLA more seriously, where I don't think in the past that's always been the case. They don't list it as an appropriate option for their Connecticut residents or their students attending those schools. So I think their involvement, CHESLA's involvement, Josh and his group is critical. I mean, for the times going forward to take our program and to make sure that there's a good awareness of what's available to our students.
Yeah, one other thing I just want to piggyback off of this. So like when we let our child go and we get them to drive, they tell them and when they go into driving school how to drive, what to do, okay? But they also tell them if you make these mistakes, if you are on your phone, okay, what's the impact and what will happen to you? The scariness, okay? But nobody tells them about the scariness of this if they are not able to pay the bill. So when they're not able to pay the bill and they get asked to leave, then what happens is that they can't go to school anyplace else because you won't get a transcript from the existing school that you have. So now you have just killed your opportunities.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you in any presentation that I do, financial aid night presentation, that's one of the things that I stress to all the families there. Think about what you're doing. Don't assume debt or, you know, take things on. Remember, it might just be 1 year. You could do it 1 year, but can you do it year two, three, or four?
Right.
People need to do that because then you're going to have that tough call. Can you stay or can you go? And what are your options later on? And that's really, you know, that's a family issue too. I mean, those are some things you can't necessarily solve. It's a partnership. You know, it's the parents, it's the students, it's the educational system, the high schools that they're coming from. And then they have to be open to it. You know, they have to be open. And sometimes you're preaching to the choir, unfortunately, Kim.
Understand.
So,
Denise, will the whiteboard be available for...
Yes, I'll save it and then it'll pop up when it's time to.
What did it say about 2 minutes?
We had the 2 minutes warning, so I just wanted to make sure.
Okay. And then what happens? We go to something else?
We go back
and then we report. You know, and if you don't mind, I will report.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
What about pillar number two, since we do have 2 seconds, is it necessary to have the economic and develop and workforce development for the public good? I don't know if I like that for the public good part of that phrase. I don't know.
I don't think in 30 seconds we can
understand. We gotta go back. Okay, thank you.
Thank you everyone. I mean, this is great. Thank you.